Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joining you again. Matt Velasquez, he's on the other line, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter for the Milwaukee Bucks. He is in Miami, who is not getting the Democratic National Convention. No, that's going to be in the year 2020 in the city of Milwaukee in Pfizer Forum, home of the Milwaukee Bucks. Matt, is everyone in Miami, are they just somber, sad about this news that Milwaukee has beaten them in this crucial contest?
You know, at this point, I'm excited that I haven't seen very many people in Miami. after my morning of traveling, I'm just happy to be alone in my room, and I think other people probably feel the same way.
Bucks about to take on the Miami Heat on Thursday night. They are
coming on Friday.
Friday night. Wow. What day of the week is it? Is it Wednesday now? I guess it is as we're recording. My name, by the way, is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. A quick reminder that you need to catch us, if you have not done so already, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. Subscribe to us, review us, rate us, let us know how much you love us. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe on Twitter. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Find me, tell me how much you love me. Matt Velasquez is easily found on Twitter, Matt_Velasquez, and give us some feedback. Brewers podcast will be ramping up, Badgers podcast going on. It's all there for you. Just find it at jsonline.com or on Apple Podcasts. Back to the issue at hand, the Milwaukee Bucks, like you said, Friday, they're going to take on the Miami Heat. This is a team that is sort of interesting, and I want to start by talking about the Heat because we've profiled a couple teams that are potential first-round playoff matchups. And if the season ends today, the Milwaukee Bucks will face the Miami Heat in the 1-8 matchup. Charlotte and Orlando jockeying for that 8th spot as well. A lot still to be decided. Miami beat the Bucks first time they met this season, and then the Bucks put a whooping on them in Milwaukee in the rematch. But they've got a couple more games this year. Give me your sense of Miami, Matt. Tell me what you think makes them tough and why they might be, you know, why they might be trouble for the Bucks in the first round.
You know, I don't think they'd be tough for the Bucks in the first round. I think
that's the content I crave, Matt. Tell me.
Well, I think that it could be a 4, maybe 5 game series. The Bucks overall just have more talent. They're a better team. Obviously, we saw them struggle shortly before Christmas in Miami on that Boston Miami back to back with one of their worst offensive, if not the worst offensive game of their season. Yet they still had a chance to beat the Heat in that game. I think that the Heat have just kind of a weird combination of guys who I think they're all generally good pieces or really decent pieces, but the fit together isn't necessarily there. They tend to give the Bucks trouble with their size just because they can throw James Johnson and Hassan Whiteside and Bam Adebayo and all those guys, you know, at people like Giannis Antetokounmpo. But I think that with the way the Bucks are put together, they're better equipped to be able to handle Miami's kind of hardworking, you know, long defense. You know, we saw that back on January 15th when the Bucks, you know, really took it to the Heat in a 124-86 win at Pfizer Forum. It was never close, never much of a contest, and it just seems like that's more in line. Obviously, that's an outlier too. When you talk about that game in the first matchup, a 94-87 Heat win in Miami. Both of those, I feel like, are kind of outliers. And the real result, or maybe the most common result between those teams, is somewhere in the middle. But the Bucks are just a better team. They have more weapons that can hurt you. Their defense is the best in the NBA. I could see the Heat maybe taking a game at home during the playoffs, but I don't think that they would be a huge problem for the Bucks in the first round.
The Bucks have another interesting matchup on the schedule shortly after the Miami game. They'll come home for the first of two straight games in Milwaukee, and actually it'll be a stretch of six games out of seven that are going to be at Pfizer Forum. But Sunday, national TV, ABC's going to have the game. It's a 2:30 p.m. I think that's Eastern time start in the afternoon against the Philadelphia 76ers. 76ers, they're pretty good, and we know this. That's not a secret. They added Tobias Harris at the trade deadline. They already have a number of stars, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid among them. And I'm curious to know what you think about that potential matchup. It's hard to say where they will ultimately fall. They're kind of jockeying with Indiana for the third seed right now in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. Boston obviously is right there too. You can't count them out as a 3, 4, or 5 seed. So it's unclear if that could be a second round matchup or if that would be a matchup the Bucks would ultimately, how about that, potentially face in the Eastern Conference Finals. Bucks, Philadelphia, we're going to party like it's 2001. But Philly, you know, they've had some lapses lately. Like you saw them against Chicago, and then they had a bad loss thereafter, but then they bounced back. What is your sense of Philadelphia? They're going to play before we talk again. How much of a, I guess, obstacle would they give the Bucks in a playoff series?
You know, they'd be tough. I know that they've had a little bit of a lull, you know, losing to the Bulls in that really weird game. You know, they lost to the Rockets, but they've bounced back against the Pacers on ABC, and They got a little bit of a test from the Cavs on Tuesday night, but you know, obviously talent wins out there. I think that just with the starting lineup that they have and the different guys who can score the ball and do different things for them, it's definitely tough. I think that their lack of a bench could hurt them. Mike Scott coming in, I believe via trade, you know, is an interesting piece. Somebody who, you know, is a veteran who's been around before, who can shoot the three. Somebody who, if memory serves, played for Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. You know, obviously, you know, you have a situation where we saw, you know, Ben Simmons last year kind of get exposed in the playoffs, where the Celtics really sagged off of him and really mucked things up in the paint and made it hard for him to do much of anything. And that kind of thwarted a lot of Philadelphia's offense. Obviously, this year, a new team. They have Jimmy Butler. They have Tobias Harris, guys who can create, who can score, who can cause problems for you. I think that, you know, we saw the Bucks go big in Utah last week. Maybe that could be something they could do again in this type of series, where you have, you know, a lot of, you know, good-sized guys on Philly's team. Definitely a lot of options for the Bucks. I'm really, really excited and intrigued to see what this matchup looks like, you know, actually in practice instead of on paper. You know, the Bucks and Sixers haven't played since really early in the season. They haven't played since the Jimmy Butler trade. Obviously, haven't seen Tobias Harris yet. So that game on Sunday will be really interesting. And I think, you know, just with those two teams matching up for the first time since they've changed a lot. You know, with George Hill going to the Bucks and Nikola Mirotic joining the Bucks, Pau Gasol too. With all these changes and finally getting to see how they look in person, you know, I think that, maybe you throw out the first matchup this year, obviously it would still help for potential tiebreaker purposes or anything like that. Not that I think any of those will actually come to pass. But having, you know, those two teams go together, you know, it could help, you know, give whatever team wins some confidence, you know, heading into the playoffs, you know, though they do have one more matchup in April, though we don't know, you know, how important that game will be in the standings for either of the teams. You know, the Bucks may be able to wrap up the number one seed before that, so you don't know if all the stars will play or anything like that. But it'll be really interesting to see them come together on Sunday.
Bucks magic number, as we record this on Wednesday, is 11 to clinch the Eastern Conference championship, or not championship, but the top seed in the East, top seed in the NBA for that matter. And you can keep updated with that. I update that every day at jsonline.com. Let's rewind a little bit to what the Bucks have done since we last chatted. Last we chatted, they'd lost two in a row and the sky was falling, and the sky not falling quite as quickly as it was. They've won three of their four games since, consecutive setbacks against Utah and Phoenix. I don't know what there is to really glean from these games. I mean, they went pretty much like I thought they might. They beat Indiana 117-98 in a very convincing performance. They beat Charlotte 131-114. Giannis, if you just read across the stat lines, per usual. Tough back-to-back in San Antonio. They lose 121-114 in a game that sounds kind of actually closer than I thought it was. I thought the Bucks were just it just wasn't going to happen that night. And then they bounce back and dismiss New Orleans 130-113. I know it's tough to sort of summarize four games like that, but was there any one, maybe two things that stood out from you in this recent stretch of play that that you'll take away?
You know, not a ton, honestly. You know, I think that, you know, that Pacers game, seeing Giannis get as fired up as he did, and upset about that lack of a foul call that eventually led to a technical for him. You know, he doesn't do that very often. You know, as competitive and as intense as he is as a person, he generally keeps it pretty, pretty subdued when it comes to dealing with referees. He chooses the polite approach more often than not, trying to find out what he did wrong so it can be amended later. This time, you know, he's after staying down on the ground a little bit, he got up, you know, sprinted across the court, not really to play defense, more to catch up to the ref. And meanwhile, you know, Bogdanovich had made a three. They're going back the other way, and Giannis definitely made his feelings heard and got a technical for it. He knew he deserved it, but that immediately energized him and energized his teammates. It got everybody going, and that signaled the beginning of the end for the Pacers as the Bucks, you know, with Giannis kind of leading the way, you know, just kind of put their foot on the gas and got going from there.
Not to interject. What is your impression of how officials have given the whistle to Giannis? Is he seeing what you might call superstar whistles, or has he not gotten that? What is your thought on that?
I don't think he's gotten the superstar whistles. I mean, there have been a couple games for sure he has, but I think overall he's just really hard to officiate. He's so strong. He's so big. You know, he does get a lot of contact, and he can absorb it in a way where it doesn't look like it affects his shot or his ability to score, you know, when there's still contact. I don't think he always gets the whistle that he should. I think there are also times where maybe he travels and doesn't get called because they kind of just give him the benefit of the doubt with his long limbs and his pivoting in the paint and stuff like that. There's some give and take, but in general, when it comes to fouls, he still gets fouled a lot. He still goes to the free throw line at a high rate relative to the rest of the NBA. But I think there's still certain plays where, you know, he probably isn't getting the benefit of the doubt.
And then, I kind of trampled on you then. Anything else from those games after Indiana? Wins against Charlotte, New Orleans, that seemed to come in pretty convincing fashion.
Yeah, those games were generally pretty straightforward. It was interesting to see the Bucks go to Brook Lopez in the post a lot more in that Charlotte win. I think one of the things that I know fans have been talking about a lot on social media, or at least bringing to my attention, is the absence of DJ Wilson. And it's something that I wrote about just a couple days ago, where Mike Budenholzer was asked, and I followed up with him in subsequent days, you know, like when he didn't play in San Antonio. And basically the long and short of it is, you know, Bud says, hey, everybody can't play. There's not space in the rotation for everybody. And, you know, even before Pau Gasol was playing, he wasn't really part of the rotation. Nikola Mirotic, you know, is getting some of those backup 4 or 5 minutes. Ersan Ilyasova is getting some backup 4 and 5 minutes. And obviously Giannis plays 30-something minutes a game. So that just doesn't leave very many options. And then Pau Gasol shows up, and he got a couple minutes here and there with Ersan Ilyasova sitting out, you know, a coach's decision against San Antonio. You know, Bud decided to try and get Pau a little bit of run, a little bit of opportunity to kind of build his chemistry and, you know, get up to speed with the team. They haven't had a ton of practices or opportunities for him to work with guys. And when they do practice, I mean, they're not going – like hard 5-on-5, you know, the kind of situations that he might need to learn plays and learn tendencies and things like that. So, you know, Bud decided to go with Gasol in that game as the backup 5 with Ilyasova out. It didn't go great. Pau was -20 in the 14 or so minutes that he played. Consistently, the Spurs, his former team, were going at him. They knew exactly how to score on him. LaMarcus Aldridge got some buckets on him. DeMar DeRozan had no fear going right at him and scoring a couple times. And, you know, I think Bud was kind of resigned to the fact that, hey, look, I'm going to I'm putting him out there. He's done this all year with his rotations, regardless of who it is. If somebody struggles early, he doesn't just pull the plug. You know, he lets them work through it. He lets them try and fight their way out of it. We saw, you know, he disagreed with it at the time, but I think Ersan Ilyasova in that win in L.A. over the Lakers, you know, had a generally below average first half. You know, he just didn't seem like he was making much of a positive impact on either end, you know, but Bud stuck with him in the second half. You know, Ersan played a sizable offensive role. You know, he was the one who was charged with staying in front of LeBron James and making things hard for him, eventually drawing a charge on him and definitely making things more difficult. You know, and he rose to the challenge. And so, you know, that's just an example of how Bud does things. He's been doing it that way all year. And so, you know, with Gasol, it was no different. He gave him opportunities, you know, in both halves with you know, 5-6 minute runs at a clip. During those runs, San Antonio went on a couple runs. Or during those stretches, San Antonio went on a couple runs. The Bucks playing that back-to-back with daylight savings time, you know, springing them forward while they flew to San Antonio. They kind of just faltered. And, you know, it wasn't an excuse that they wanted to make. No one in the locker room was like, oh, yeah, if our schedule was different. You know, no one said any of that stuff. They were like, hey, like, we still had a chance. We still fought hard. Just didn't have it. And, you know, so with the way that they're set up, you know, DJ Wilson isn't going to get as many minutes going forward. I don't know if that'll matter at all in the playoffs, in the sense that the rotations for most teams usually tighten up in the playoffs, meaning that if DJ's out now, it's not like, you know, he probably won't be – he wouldn't have been in the rotation anyway. Come playoff time, they brought in Mirotić to play. And so, you know, with Giannis getting more minutes and Mirotić and, you know, Ilyasova – I mean, Bud is hugely – trusting of Ilyasova and has been all year. And so, you know, I think that DJ can definitely bring some positives. His defense has been really good when he has played. His offense is in a little bit of a rut with his inconsistent play right now in terms of his inconsistent opportunities. Over the course of February, his shooting fell off after a really good start. You know, so could he help? And will he help? I think he will. I think there will be times where he may be called upon. But right now, it's just not his time.
I want to go back to another thing you wrote at jsonline.com, and you can read that right now, is an article on Malcolm Brogdon, and you sort of went into sort of the value that he brings to the team, the type of player he is. And you know, Brogdon was in the news recently for some comments he made in The Guardian, which is kind of a UK publication, about the segregated nature of the city of Milwaukee. And I know a lot of people responded to that. I got a lot of comments because I had sort of aggregated some of that material and put it on jsonline.com and heard a lot from a lot of people. And I know that, that people reacting two very different ways to that. Very thoughtful kid, very smart, and that's been demonstrated time and time again, both just off the court and on it. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, he was able to acclimate so quickly to the NBA and go from a second-round draft pick, senior in college, second-round draft pick, to the Rookie of the Year. What I guess, can you kind of try to summarize his value to this Bucks team? He kind of gets forgotten as we think about the stars on this team, but there's no question. I mean, he's a starter, regular contributor, and there are games where he has hit big shots, carried this team at times. How would you describe Malcolm Brogdon's value to the Milwaukee Bucks to some, you know, to somebody who didn't know any better?
You know, I went around the locker room and I talked to a couple guys over the past few days or week, just kind of asked, like, hey, like, you know, what is the value to you? Like, what, you know, what does Malcolm mean to this team? And more often than not, I mean, almost probably everybody, actually, the answer involved one of the two words, you know, steady or consistent, you know, and maybe both, you know, just the way that he has been able to, you know, and Chris Middleton told me, he goes, hey, we don't run plays for him. Like, you know, he's just kind of, he's out there and he has to make decisions and he has to kind of just, whenever he gets the opportunity, he needs to shoot it. He needs to drive, whatever. But the, you know, the offense isn't made for him. It's made for just, you know, general team success and for certain guys to have the ball, you know, so they're not running it for him. But he's still able to find his spots well. And he's the guy who, you know, he's a starter. He subs out early, but then he goes back in later and he manages the end of the first quarter into the second. He runs that second unit. You know, he plays that combo guard spot where sometimes he's off ball, sometimes he's running the point. And just no matter what he's asked to do, he's been generally successful at it. You know, when the team needs a big shot, you know, he's been there, you know, time and again. I was looking back through the season, and there have been three separate games that he's made a critical three-pointer with less than 2 minutes. He did that to put the Bucks up 5 against the Spurs back in November. He did that in January with back-to-back threes to tie the game and then, you know, essentially win the game against the Toronto Raptors on the road. And then he did that with a three that put the Bucks up 6 with less than a minute left, or no, less than 2 minutes left against the Lakers early in March. So he's been doing that. You know, he, you know, at all times just kind of has the same look on his face, same vibe. He's never too high, never too low. Just very, you know, measured, kind of helping the team navigate all the ups and downs of whatever game it is. It's just nothing is – no moment's too big, too small. You know, he's just the same. So I talked to him a little bit about that. He said, hey, that's just kind of how I grew up. You know, we don't – like he grew up in a family where you don't show people when you're sweating. And he goes, that's just kind of the motto he lives by. The most impressive thing in terms of his consistency, you could argue, just would be his shooting. I mean, he's putting up historically great numbers. He could become just one of the few players to ever join the 50-40-90 club of shooting 50% from the field, over 40% from three, and over 90% from the free throw line during the course of the season. And let me just give you a rundown of the players who have been 50-40-90. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Steve Nash 4 times, Dirk Nowitzki, Reggie Miller, Mark Price, and Larry Bird 2 times. So,
whoa,
pretty good company.
Yeah, that's impressive. Malcolm Brogdon will be, I have a feeling, one of the most underappreciated players in this town if he's gone, when he's gone, if next year doesn't work out the way that I'm sure Bucks management would like it to work out, or if he's gone at any point in the future, he's going to be a guy that is very missed once he's gone, and a key contributor right now. We're going to keep it a little short this week and let you get back to resting up here after a long couple days of travel. Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, thanks for joining us, letting us know how things are going with the Bucks. Again, their magic number to clinch the top spot in the East is now 11. Keep updated at jsonline.com, and obviously read everything Matt Velasquez produces from every game all over the map. Matt, enjoy some of that Miami sunshine. I know it's been exhausting, but get outside, breathe it in, and see if you can bring home another victory for the Milwaukee Bucks.
I will definitely enjoy the sunshine.
Yes. Thank you for joining us, sir. We'll catch you again next week.
All right. Can't wait.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.